the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. A senior cleric in the Church of England says that his church needs to apologize to Charles Darwin. That's looking ahead next year to the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birth and also the 150th anniversary of his most famous work, The Origin of Species. Now, I don't know what you think about the idea of an apology to Charles Darwin, but I have to tell you, I find the idea ludicrous, and I find this particular argument all the more so. And it is yet found on a special web section of the Church of England set aside to observe the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin. And the man who's writing the article and calling for the apology is none other than the Director of Mission and Public Relations for the Church of England, a senior minister himself, and the church says it's not yet official. We'll be talking about what this means and frankly, the kind of confusion behind the very idea of an apology to Charles Darwin. Today on the Albert Mohler Program, to call and join the discussion, give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to say right now that I appreciate all the many listeners of the Albert Mohler Program who sent me the news about this particular development, because numerous listeners to this program and readers of my writings at www.albertmohler.com sent me word about this. So whether you're reading at albertmohler.com or listening to this program, I just want to thank you for sending along that information, because it is exactly the kind of story we need to talk about on the air. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, and this is the place where we need to look at the idea, the very idea of an apology to Charles Darwin, and really get at what's going on there. We'll get to that in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news, I'm glad to tell you that we are back in our studio here at the Albert Mohler Program and on the campus of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, where for a few days now we have been without power. In the aftermath of Hurricane Ike, remnants of the storm came through the Ohio Valley in the central United States. The headline of several newspapers today indicating that Hurricane Ike is continuing to bring a great deal of havoc throughout much of the Midwest. Rain on the north side of the storm and wind on the southern side of the storm. A vice through the middle part of the country. Levees are endangered along some towns on the Mississippi River. And states like Arkansas and Tennessee and especially Kentucky and Ohio are digging out from significant wind damage. At one point here in Louisville, over 300,000 homes and businesses were without power. Still now somewhere around 180,000, I am told. In Cincinnati and its region just to the north of us here along the Ohio Valley and the Ohio River, as many as 650,000 homes originally. As of Sunday afternoon, without power, crews are working to restore power. And I can just tell you how grateful I am to have electricity back. And it leads me to be reminded of those who right now, for instance, on the Texas Gulf Coast, are not only without power, but without any realistic hope of getting it back on anytime soon. The Washington Post and Associated Press reporting that even as rescuers are reaching devastated corners of the Texas Gulf Coast by helicopter, it looks like hundreds of thousands of people are going to be really having a very difficult time coping with a loss of electricity, especially in Galveston and Houston and surrounding areas. Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, has called the damage to his state monumental. Now, get this. The governor of Texas has called for an estimated 1 million evacuees. That is 1 million people to stay away for another week to allow relief workers and utility crews to do their jobs. The problem there in Houston, Galveston, and throughout the Texas Gulf Coast is not only that the power is off, but that power lines are on the ground, creating an extremely dangerous situation. And because of the risk of injury to life, people are being asked to stay away. There is a whole lot going on. The Bolivar Peninsula there off the coast. Well, actually, it was the coast of Texas. It's now off the coast of Texas. It's now an island. The bridge that connected the spit of land with the mainland is now broken and covered with water. Helicopter flights are revealing that throughout the Texas Gulf Coast, there are similar signs of the devastation of Hurricane Ike. In Houston, Mayor Bill White is complaining about a slow response by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. But it looks like you have the resources of the federal and state governments here spread about as thin as can possibly be, and especially when you look at the effect of a storm that not only did this kind of damage on the Gulf Coast, but has continued to bring such damage working its way through the center part of the country. When you look at hurricanes in terms of the history of their damage patterns, this one's going to go down in the books as one that has brought rather unexpected injury to the heartland as well as devastation to much of the coast. I want to say a word right now of my renewed concern for folks who are without electricity and basic services in these areas. We got just a taste of it here in Louisville, Kentucky. And the reality is that we were told and have been told and are still being told that it may be 10 to 14 days before some people here have restored power. But when you start looking at what it is on the Texas Gulf Coast, and by the way, we've been blessed with good weather here in Louisville, Kentucky, very mild temperatures, clear air. Had the situation been different, the misery here would have been much greater. I can only imagine what it must be like in the humid and hot regions of the Texas Gulf Coast without electricity, without basic services, with not only electricity, but water also interrupted in terms of service. So let's continue to pray. And by the way, it may be that even from your church or from your group, you have rescue teams going down to help. This is a good time to recognize the volunteerism of Americans who by the hundreds of thousands on an annual basis volunteer for disaster relief in the wake of storms such as Hurricane Ike. So blessings to all who are a part of that rescue and recovery effort, and blessings to all those who are now trying to cope with the aftermath of this storm. A review of other issues in the news leads to several very interesting things. For instance, there is a report out now suggesting that almost all children are video gamers. This is one of the first times a technology has spread throughout an entire generation to the point that now the study that came from the Pew Internet and American Life Project indicates that video games have become so ingrained in youth culture that even children who do not have their own personal access to these games have some kind of borrowed access to such a rate that they are fairly adept at playing the games. The games are thus becoming a part of youth culture to the extent that the games become a part of conversation. The symbolism becomes a part of the life of these young people. Nearly two-thirds play video games to socialize face-to-face with friends and family. Just over a quarter said they also play with internet friends. This means you have gaming going on not only between two kids, but between two kids who could be in two very different parts of the world. This is a fascinating development of technology that is changing childhood in America. Amanda Linhart, a senior researcher at Pew that led the report that is the result of the survey, said it shows that gamers are social people, these kids. They communicate just as much. They spend time face-to-face just as much as other kids. They email and text, end quote. Well, I'm going to take her at her word. I'm going to take the results of this research and say, all right, it shows that these young people, these children are really communicating a lot. And I guess if all I was concerned about was the quantity of communication, maybe I'd be satisfied. But I just have to share with you that I think the quality as well as the quantity of this communication is something that every parent should be concerned about. And I have seen some of this, a great deal of this online communication. And let's just say it is no substitute for face-to-face conversation. It is no substitute for a real relationship. The online virtual relationship is not the same. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm not saying there can be no fun and fulfillment in it, as well as danger and seduction in it. But we also have to understand there is something about a face-to-face, real-life, real-time, real-space relationship. And the communication that comes with that relationship that is qualitatively different. Maybe not quantitatively different. Maybe you can add up the same number of words and the same number of minutes, but it is qualitatively different. And I think we all really know that. The Washington Times is reporting through the Associated Press that colleges are now having to spend billions of dollars reteaching the basics to freshmen. Turns out that even as one of the largest freshman classes in American college and university history has arrived on campuses this fall, colleges are having to spend $2.9 billion, that's the upward estimate, just teaching students what they were supposed to have learned in high school. The Associated Press reports the problem of colleges devoting huge amounts of time and money to remediation isn't new, though its scale and cost have in the past been difficult to measure. The latest report gives somewhat larger estimates than some previous studies, but it is not out of line with the trends that were suggested in those previous studies. So let me just tell you, as one who lives this life as a college and a seminary president, I can tell you that you would sometimes be surprised what these very bright young people don't know coming from schools where they have graduated and sometimes had just outstanding grades. And so without trying to pour a great deal of cynicism upon the school systems, let's just say that something isn't working. And perhaps it's that the schools, the public schools in particular, are spending so much time giving attention to things other than these basics. There's good reason to believe, at least I think, that the marginalization of the basics in the lives of many of these students is beginning to show up when they get to campus and have trouble reading and writing and adding. Back to talk about an apology to Charles Darwin in just a moment on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. I found this news story to be shocking and yet extremely revealing because it tells us a great deal about the Church of England, but also about where many, I would say, soft-headed Christians are, trying to think through some of these issues. We live in an emotive age, what some people call an affective age. It's the age of feeling. And boy, that really comes through. And that feeling is particularly dangerous. That age of emotionalism is particularly pernicious in an age of a doctrinally disarmed church. And that's what we certainly see, I would hate to have to say, but I must say, in the Church of England. A senior cleric of the Church of England wants his church to apologize to Charles Darwin in time for the observance of the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birth next year. The Reverend Dr. Malcolm Brown, Director of Mission and Public Affairs for the Church, made his case in an article entitled Good Religion Needs Good Science. It was published in a new section of the Church of England's official website. This is what he said, quote, Charles Darwin, 200 years from your birth, the Church of England owes you an apology for misunderstanding you, and by getting our first reaction wrong, encouraging others to misunderstand you still. He also wrote, we try to practice the old virtues of faith seeking understanding and hope that makes some amends, end quote. Apologize to Charles Darwin? I mean, just think about this. The Church of England may well need to apologize, but not to Charles Darwin. If anything, the Church needs to apologize for its rightful embarrassment in considering an apology to Darwin. But it seems this Church is not at all embarrassed. Dr. Brown apparently is a big believer in Darwin's theory of natural selection. This is what he writes, quote, subsequent generations have built on Darwin's work, but have not significantly undermined his fundamental theory of natural selection. He insists, quote, there is nothing here that contradicts Christian teaching, end quote. Well, Charles Darwin sure thought that the theory of natural selection contradicted Christian teaching. But then again, I would have to argue that he may have had a better understanding of Christian teaching than Dr. Brown, making the case for the apology. To the end of his life, Darwin identified himself as a nominal Anglican, but by that time he had long since abandoned theism and any belief in a personal God. The relationship between Darwin's changing religious beliefs and his developing scientific theory can be read either of two ways, and even Darwin appeared to have been unclear in his own mind how the two were related. The two options come down to this. Either Darwin's theory of natural selection undermined his belief in a personal God who directed creation, or his abandonment of his belief in a personal God as the agent of creation led to his development of the theory of natural selection. Either way, Darwin himself was clear that the belief that God is creator and the belief that life is evidence of natural selection are incompatible beliefs. Darwin differed, for example, with the American botanist Asa Gray over just this question. Gray allowed for God as the agent of creation, working through what appeared to be natural selection, a form of what was later called theistic evolution. But Darwin would have none of that, and he rejected any role for a divine designer. As Peter Bowler explains in his book, Charles Darwin, The Man and His Influence, the one thing Darwin could not admit was that God somehow played an active role in controlling the direction of evolution. Dr. Brown argues that Darwin was misunderstood. In his words, and I quote, Darwin's meticulous application of the principles of evidence-based research was not the problem. His theory caused offense because it challenged the view that God had created human beings as an entirely different kind of creation to the rest of the animal world. End quote. No, Dr. Brown, that's simply wrong. Darwin's theory caused offense because it challenged the view that God had anything to do with the creation of any species at all. And that's something about which Charles Darwin was abundantly clear. Dr. Brown's version of Darwinism simply isn't compatible with what Charles Darwin actually believed and wrote and taught. Dr. Brown wants to make the apology to Darwin because he is embarrassed that some in his church rejected Darwin's theories. This, he suggests, was due to the fact that the church is often fearful of new ideas. Quote, when a big new idea emerges, which changes the way people look at the world, it's easy to feel that every old idea, every certainty is under attack, and then do battle against the new insights, end quote. That kind of facile thinking is all too evident in today's doctrinally disarmed church. Here a senior cleric attempts to do public relations by offering a posthumous apology to Charles Darwin while dismissing any theological concern about his theory and instead insisting that nothing in Darwinism contradicts Christian teaching. Charles Darwin abandoned belief in God, and he himself traced this loss of faith to his theory of natural selection. He believed that his own doctrine of evolution was a direct contradiction to theism in general and to Christianity in particular. Darwin argued that belief in miracles was insane and that the Christian doctrine of hell is immoral. In his autobiography, Darwin wrote, and I quote, I can hardly see how anyone ought to wish Christianity to be true. For if so, the plain language of the text seems to show that the men who do not believe, and this would include my father, brother, and almost all my best friends, will be everlastingly punished, and that is a damnable doctrine, end quote. There are several points to observe here. First, Darwin clearly expressed confidence that Christianity is not true, and that we should be thankful for this fact. Second, Darwin, unlike some modern reformers of hell, understood that the plain language of the text, that is the Bible, points to hell as an everlasting punishment. Third, Darwin simply would not believe in a God who would send his relatives and friends to hell, period. By the time Darwin wrote his autobiography, he had already abandoned belief in any personal deity. As Janet Brown of the British Society for the History of Science explains, quote, living out for himself the archetypal Victorian crisis of faith, Darwin perhaps recognized that he had lost the last vestiges of faith when he discovered that biology provided him with the answers he most desired. In the end, in his autobiography, he asserted that religious belief was little more than inherited instinct, akin to a monkey's fear of a snake. Now, there are a lot of interesting things going on here. First of all, this makes clear that Darwin's own arguments are basically those put forth now by the new atheists like Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett. Does Dr. Brown intend to apologize to them as well? Now, an official with the Church of England has rushed to clarify to the press that Dr. Brown was not offering an official apology on behalf of the church. The Telegraph, that is a major London newspaper, reported that a member of the Darwin family dismissed the apology as, quote, pointless, end quote. Andrew Darwin, a great-grandson of Charles Darwin, asked, why bother? He went on to argue that the apology was more about making the Church of England feel better than to right a wrong. Well, Dr. Brown's apology, offered on the official website of the Church of England, and in his role as Director of Mission and Public Affairs, may be pointless, but it certainly makes a point about the Church of England. As a matter of fact, it might go a long way toward explaining how a church that once formed the backbone of British life now holds the attention of less than 5% of British citizens on any given Sunday. People come to church hungry for the gospel and in order to fear God, not for an apology offered to a self-described enemy of the faith, who believe that faith in God is akin to a monkey's fear of a snake. You know, I look at this call for an apology to Charles Darwin, and I just have to say this is another sign of why some people think Christianity is such nonsense. Here you have a man, Charles Darwin, who wrote in his own autobiography that he considered himself an enemy of Christianity. He rejected miracles. He rejected a personal God. He rejected the deity of Christ. He rejected the authority of Scripture. He rejected the entirety of the supernatural and said that religion was nothing more than superstition and instinct, just like a monkey was instinctively afraid of a snake. And yet you have a senior cleric of the Church of England who is embarrassed that some in his church had problems with that. It tells you, or at least it tells me, just about everything you need to know about the current travail of the Church of England. When you have a church falling over itself here, and again, they may say this isn't official, but it's on the church's official website. When you have a church falling over itself to apologize to Charles Darwin, you've just about reached the end of the game, folks. Will the last, leaving the Church of England, please turn out the lights. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Join the discussion. Let's talk about what this means. Coming up next on the Albert Miller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The idea of apologizing to Charles Darwin falls along the lines of so many apologies offered before. And let me just say at the onset, there is good reason sometimes for an apology. And, for instance, the Southern Baptist Convention, the denomination of which I'm a part, had to apologize to African Americans for the legacy of slavery. I say had to. There was no external requirement put upon us. But as we were celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Southern Baptist Convention, we recognized that's a part of the legacy of our denomination that we needed to deal with. And we can't go back to those who are now dead, nor can we speak for the slaveholders who were now dead. Rather, we could simply say there is an institutional, denominational, organizational apology that is owed here for a well-recognized, undoubtable wrong, a great immoral wrong. And since there's some awkwardness in this because those who were there in 1845 are now dead, we're now saying, to the best of our ability, we want to articulate the fact that we think there is an ongoing responsibility for an apology here. But that's for a wrong that we understand to be deeply immoral and deeply evil. The problem is when these apologies become just public relations. In the case of an apology to Charles Darwin, the thing actually collapses and turns on its head. Charles Darwin declared himself to be an enemy of the gospel, an enemy of the church, an enemy of Christianity. And the Church of England's going to apologize to him. And then this senior cleric, Malcolm Brown, arguing on behalf of the church as its public relations officer, says that the problem with Darwin is that he was misunderstood. No, Dr. Brown, the problem with Darwin is that once you understand his theory, it's incompatible with any claim that God had anything to do with creation in terms of creating the species, of guiding and designing in any sense creation. You know, here you have what you just have to believe is the soft-headedness of so much liberal Christianity on public display. And of course, it made the front lines all over the British newspapers and made the international press. And, you know, having a member of the Darwin family say that he thought this was pointless was about the most articulate thing I thought you could come up with. But even though it's pointless, it does make a point. And that point is nothing to do with Charles Darwin and everything to do with the Church of England. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. There's so many different angles of this that are simply ready for conversation, inviting comment, and new points to be raised. Join the conversation by calling me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Ramirez, listening on the line. What do you think, Ramirez?
Well, Dr. Mohler, I agree with you. I don't believe that we owe Darwin an apology, especially while most scientists agree that our planet is 4.5 billion years old. And, you know, Christians, we believe that, well, most Christians believe, rather, that it's, you know, it's roughly 6,000 years old. But this quest for knowledge can be shortened just by looking into the Word of God, where we find that we are the fourth creation. We see that the first set of inhabitants that the Lord created, after they went astray, the Lord judged them in a catastrophic way and buried them in a pit that is found in the Hebrew. We take Hebrew and we can see the meaning of the word. And we look at Psalms 9, chapter 9, verses 5 and 15. We see that the Lord buried them in a shakak pit. Then he restored the present earth and created another set of beings, which was the second creation. And after they went astray, a lot of time went by and they went astray. So the Lord judged them again in a catastrophic fire and knife.
Ramirez, I'm going to have to ask you to send me a memo on that, because I got to tell you, we are way, way off topic here. And I have to tell you, I do know the Hebrew, and I don't know a thing of what you're talking about there in the biblical text. But send me a memo on that, and I'll be glad to take a look at it. But I agree with you on this much. There's no justification for an apology to Charles Darwin. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It's what makes talk radio interesting. You join the conversation by giving me a call at 877-893-8255. In this case, you had a senior cleric of the Church of England, identified as the Reverend Dr. Malcolm Brown, who is the director of mission and public relations for the Church of England, who makes the announcement he thinks it's high time the church apologizes to Charles Darwin. Now, I look at that and I have to say, again, it says very little about Darwin and very much about the current state of the Church of England. And it's not just the Church of England. It's so many other churches and denominations that are so confused about reality that they would apologize to a self-declared, self-conscious enemy of the faith and embarrass the faithful in so doing. To join the conversation, call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, this particular cleric with the Church of England is making the case, and I want us to take particular note of his case, he's making the case that there is nothing in the theory of natural selection that is incompatible with Christianity. Now, if you take that, if you say there's no contradiction between natural selection and Christianity, I just want us to take apart what we're looking at here, because this is the heart of the collision of worldviews between Christianity and Darwinism or evolutionary thought. Darwin made this clear, and I want to go back to his correspondence with Asa Gray. Asa Gray was an American botanist, perhaps the premier scientist of that era here in the United States. And Asa Gray also bought into the theory of evolution. The species and the development of species, and he believed that it certainly looked natural, and he thought it was not wrong to call it natural selection, because it appeared that, for instance, you know, longer and shorter beak or whatever in a species for adaptability and survival could well be explained by natural terms. However, Asa Gray also wanted to leave room for God in the equation, and so he, as a theistic evolutionist, suggested that God was actually guiding evolution, guiding the development of species through this evolutionary process. Charles Darwin rejected that out of hand and said that natural selection is just that, natural selection. There can be no design. There can be no designer. This is not something that is inevitably to turn out in one way. It could turn out in any multitude, perhaps an infinite multitude of ways. And so if you say is compatible with Christianity, you're making the case that Christianity is compatible with the idea that the species could have turned out in any way because God's not involved in the process. And let me just ask you, how do you square that in any sense with a Christian worldview? The Christian worldview begins with an understanding of creation and that a purposive creator for his greater glory created the world and all within it, and in particular created human beings as the only creature to bear his image. And this is the very starting point of the Christian worldview, the great story, the meta-narrative of the gospel that is creation, fall, redemption, and consummation. How can you say that that is, when you look at natural selection straightforwardly, that it is compatible with Christianity? You can only say it because either you don't understand natural selection, or you don't understand Christianity, or you are redefining the one or the other just in order to make your case. Now, I don't know what's going on here with the Reverend Dr. Malcolm Brown. I don't know what his full agenda is here. I do know that he doesn't know what he's talking about in that article. And I do know that it's illustrative of a pattern found in liberal Christianity to suggest that there is nothing incompatible about evolution in Christianity. Now, if you're going to make that case, let me just assume that I could play the part of a theistic evolutionist for a few moments. I am not a theistic evolutionist. I believe that the term itself is an oxymoron and the belief system is nonsensical. But let me step into it for a moment and do my very best. Here's the kind of case I would have to make. I would have to make the case that natural selection is, as Asa Gray said, apparently natural, but not wholly or completely natural. That there could be a supernatural influence, either in the creation of the context and the environment in which these changes and adaptions basically take place, or that there's some kind of lure out there in front that is drawing the process to a specific result, for instance, a human being. Now, there are theistic evolutionists who've made both of those cases. There are theistic evolutionists who've tried to blend those two arguments. But Dr. Brown doesn't even offer that kind of argument. He simply says there is no incompatibility. Now, I go back to this basic fact. Either God created the world or he didn't. Here's a forced option. Either God created the world and intended for human beings to be the only creature made in his image, or he is surprised by the accident. If he is, by the way, surprised by the accident, then he isn't God. Now, it tells us a great deal that the Church of England at this time has put up this website. I mean, just think for a moment. Here's the Church of England, and it has a website like every major denomination and probably most, you know, significant local churches. And on its website, it has created a special section to commemorate the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin. You know, try to make sense of that with me. I mean, what does it say? This is a church that's pouring its energies into this, when it is itself being torn asunder by debates over homosexuality and women as bishops and you name it. And this is a church that has seen attendance figures in its home nation, that is Great Britain, fall from something like 70%, now get that, something like 70% of all British citizens were in an Anglican church, a Church of England congregation, in the late 19th century. Now it's 5% and less. Well, I have to say I can see why, because what's left in the Church of England are beautiful old buildings that people are trying to keep together that are empty of people. And I say that with no celebration and not to throw stones at another denomination, because I wish it were not so. I wish the Church of England was the evangelical denomination it could have been. I wish that it was standing stalwartly for the gospel, as many historic Anglicans have. I want to know what happened to the church of J.C. Ryle. I want to know what happened to the church of the great missionaries of the Anglican tradition that went out to carry the gospel to the ends of the earth. I want to know what happened to that church. And I think I do know what happened to that church, and that is the seduction of the age. And I think the evidence of that comes down to this apology. Now, if an apology is needed, then we need morally to supply the apology. But the idea of apologizing to an enemy of the faith, for a senior leader of the church to suggest that the church should apologize to one who is the self-declared enemy of Christianity, who denied the miracles, denied the incarnation, denied the authority of Scripture, denied the historicity of the Gospels, and denied the existence even of a personal God, I have to tell you, I have to throw up my hands and say, I give up. You think you can't be shocked, and then something like this comes along. Now, those who are looking at this and saying, boy, that's ridiculous, it's a spectacle to be seen from across the ocean, let me just warn you that that kind of logic, the seductiveness of that kind of argument, is much closer at hand than you might think. And there are an awful lot of Christians just walking along as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, giving inadequate attention to this question, who would say, well, so far as I know, there really is no incompatibility between Darwinism and Christianity. I want to be popular among the smart people and the intelligent, the elite, and I'll say, yeah, I believe in evolution. I also want to say I'm a Christian. You really need to look a lot closer at that assumption. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I hope that if you have some questions about this basic collision and contradiction between the theory of natural selection and the Christian gospel, you have some questions about that, feel free to write me. And we're always glad to hear from you. I've had several good responses to the article published this morning at albertmueller.com on an apology to Charles Darwin. And I'm always pleased to hear from those of you who are reading. And let me come back to the fact that I owe a debt of appreciation to so many readers and listeners who sent me information about this breaking story. And it tells me that I've got a very intelligent listenership and readership interested in many of these issues. And, you know, on talk radio, you just never know some days what you're going to get to talk about. But this is the place where we come together to say, how can we reasonably, honorably, intelligently think through these issues. So if you see something out there you think we need to be thinking and talking about, email me, send me a link, send me a story, tell me about it, and I'll be in your debt for it. I want to tell you that my newest book is out. This is the fourth book that is just out this year. It's entitled Desire and Deceit, The Real Cost of the New Sexual Tolerance. It's out from Multnomah Random House Publishers, and we'll be talking about it more on this program upcoming. But it's a book that really deals with what is going on in terms of the sexual confusions of the day. It's an attempt to try to put this in a Christian framework of understanding, to say, let's remember why God created us as sexual beings and what this is all about. It's about His glory. His glory manifested in the institution of marriage and in the gift of children. But this is a book that looks particularly at some of the most hot-button issues of the day. And I've been asked for this from so many people who say, you know, I was talking with my teenager about this, or a college student saying on campus we were talking about another topic. You know, how should we think about these things? The reality is that the Christian worldview offers all the resources you need to understand these issues. In fact, the great narrative we were talking about of the Christian truth claim of the gospel itself of creation, fall, redemption, and consummation is the very framework for understanding everything, including sexuality. It goes to creation and talks about the wonder of how God created us as sexual beings for His glory. We then have to go to the fall and talk about how sin entered human experience in such a catastrophic way, such that something as powerful as sex has become so powerfully seductive and corrupting. Then we look at redemption, and we understand that the gospel is the means of rescue, not only from the tentacles of sexual sin, but from sin itself. And then we look to consummation, understanding that what we are given in Christ ultimately is better, sweeter, more powerful, more pleasurable, more satisfying than anything we would ever know here on earth. It's one thing to talk about marriage and its wonders on this earth, and it is one of God's most precious gifts. It's another thing to look forward to the marriage supper of the Lamb. We'll be back to talk about this and other topics tomorrow. It's Ask Anything Wednesday, so you'll set the agenda. I'm thankful the power's back on. We'll be back on with you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.